Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle. Aha!
Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little piss my foot on his fang.
With a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzard of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're working our way through Alan's own podcast, From the Oast House, Series 2. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
I despise O2.
Nick Holder.
I'm not sure what he was, just a small magic man.
And Tom Stab.
Right, let's pothole.
So, we will indeed be potholing this episode, but first there's a small matter of a stakeout, and before we even get to that, as always, we open each Oast House episode with a little bit about some of the accompanying promo that's been going on for this series. Tom Stab is going to take us back to the exciting world of LinkedIn.
What a world. What a world. So, yes, last week we covered how to make professional connections. This week, this post went out on the 23rd of September, so the day after Oast House Series 2 dropped on Audible. And it's called Working From Home, A Suggested Itinerary. So basically, again, we'll post the link so you can read the full thing in your own time. But I do like the opening section to this where Alan talks about working from home. He says, apart from the deaths, the greatest downside to the COVID pandemic was surely the closing down of shared office spaces. Working from home was fun for a few days. Sending emails from the bath, eating choc ices while designing a PowerPoint presentation, conducting Zoom calls with the contented smirk of a man who is secretly naked from the waist down. All good, honest British fun. So, yes, I liked all of that. So this is basically an itinerary of how Alan spent his day in lockdown, starting at 8 a.m. And ending at, if I scroll down, 7 p.m. So, yes, we'll post that on socials and you can read it in your own time. But as always, it is a lot of fun.
There's an element to this of him wanting everyone back in the office and back in shared office space, isn't there? Because he's been a vocal supporter of Regus, I think it is. Regus Office Space.
Regus. Yeah, in previous Partridge output as well.
But what I also like about this is that Alan in no way really ever goes into an office, has been in an office, is part of an office. But yeah, he's talking about how everyone needs to get back into the office. Yeah. He works in a radio studio when he works in radio, but at the moment he's not really doing anything, so he's never in a bloody office.
I think it's quite a good lampooning of the sort of posts that you see on LinkedIn quite a lot as well. It's kind of like people going like, my path to success, or my secret to success is... this is my working day. Get up at 5 a.m. Do this, do that. It's definitely mocking that sort of thing as well in that world, isn't it?
Oh God, LinkedIn is such a wasteland of shit as well, isn't it? Like the amount of the worst ones are it's just so clickbaity as well. The amount of things where it's like, the opening line is like, I killed a man today, and then you open the fold and it's like, I killed him with kindness, offering him 20% off my NFT, you know, starter pack. Like, oh, awful business. Anyway,
tell us what you think, Adam.
before we crack into this to this specific episode, just talking about episodes 3 and 4, when I looked at what the titles were, and when I sort of started listening to the first few seconds or minutes of each of these episodes, I made two predictions and both of them came true. The prediction for this episode is that in Stakeout, he will be confronted by the person that he is staking out. And episode 4, potholing, he's going to get stuck.
Yeah.
did we all guess that he was going to get stuck when potholing? I think that was, I could read that coming a mile off. Yeah.
We'll get to it.
And also that would follow some hubris about how easy it was going to be or how live he was feeling. Let me give you the synopsis for episode 3, the first episode we're going to look at today, Stakeout. First thing to notice is that I think there's an argument that Stakeout is all one word, but it's got a space in it here, probably because of Alan. So Stakeout. Alan lies in wait, hoping to catch fly tippers who've been dumping building materials on a patch of grass behind the cul-de-sac. I think it's also noteworthy when you compare it to some of the synopsis for episodes 1 and 2, which were much more professional sounding and less like a petty grievance. So in episodes 1, it was a chance encounter with a local radio exec offers Alan hope of a professional revival. A mere 2 episodes later, he's in wait hoping to catch fly tippers who've been dumping building materials on a patch of grass behind the cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac, assuming you already know all about the cul-de-sac as well.
Yeah, which has never been mentioned before.
Exactly.
It suggests as well, the cul-de-sac thing, because he has given sort of scant detail about where he lives and Uber drivers and where he gets dropped off. But this episode makes it suggest as if he is living in relatively close proximity with others. You know, he can see neighbours, they can see him. And in the Oast House, he has referenced a neighbour, I believe. But this cul-de-sac setup sounds almost like a different location to the Oast House. And again, unless I'm wrong, there is no reference to the Oast House in this episode.
So I've not listened all the way to the end of the series, but... they do give his address at some point in the later episode, and I did look it up, and actually it didn't to me look like a place where an Oast House would be, but there is a legitimate cul-de-sac.
It's Glyndebourne Close in this episode. Yeah.
We're jumping ahead a little bit, but I did look that up and it is a cul-de-sac.
In Salisbury though, isn't it?
It is, but I hadn't listened to the end of the series. I wondered if perhaps the joke here is that he actually doesn't have the Oast House anymore at all.
I just think this is one of those things where there's a bit of inconsistency in the APU, and it's kind of, you know, it's only people like us that are spending this amount of time.
Are we overthinking it? Is that the bottom line?
I think so, because there, in other episodes in this series, he does talk...
In episode 140, are we overthinking it?
Shit. There are other episodes in this series where he does say, I'm Alan Partridge coming to you from the Oast House or something like that. So, but I mean, I guess the thing to remember is it actually isn't, he does references in series 1, it isn't really an Oast House, it's an Oast style house. So I think perhaps in series 1 he was making the effort to give the illusion that he was in perhaps a larger, more salubrious location, which is more spaced out from his neighbours. But he does talk about in that series, there's the bit when he thinks one of his neighbours has killed his wife or something, and it's not that. So he's close enough to kind of spy on them like that. So, you know, whether it's just a bit of a dropping of that pretense somewhat.
Speaking of spying on people and accusing them of things it turns out they haven't done, we open at
5 past midnight, where he spotted a white male, 5 foot 10, 180 pounds, polo neck, cords, appearance pleasing, prowling, no, lurking, loitering. It turns out it's Ollie and he lives there. So, this hasn't got off to a great start, has it? But it is followed by a fun bit where he manages to do some fun animal wordplay when he talks about animaling an animal. So aping a dog, ramming a badger, and so on. Although dogging an ape, he admits, is an ethical minefield.
Yes, because he came into that because he talks of cowing a fox, because he's speaking in a hushed tone, which is normally reserved for snooker commentary, Springwatch, and cowing a fox.
Yeah. And also, for this to be successful, he needs to be invisible, like, as he says, the male presenters of the One Show.
Great gag, I thought. That really enjoyed.
Brilliant, yeah.
Be as unremarkable as possible.
We find out that he's lying across the back seat in a dog blanket, which is something I wouldn't expect Alan to do personally. And then we get into a section that I believe only three of us will be able to comment on.
I was going to ask you about this.
Yeah.
So it's basically where he's talking about he basically disguising himself as a seat, right?
Indeed.
So does this hold any link to what happens in Stratagem?
Yes. Basically.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Spoilers ahead for me, perhaps?
I mean, to a degree, only in as much as what he sort of describes sort of happens
right.
to an extent in Stratagem. And obviously this is, I think, something that... it doesn't really spoil it at all, does it? It's a very visual joke in Stratagem, and this is obviously a bit of an audio callback, but I think in my mind I could visualize how this looked in Stratagem, therefore the joke became even funnier, because okay. to describe someone, you know, disguise yourself as a seat doesn't really make much sense, but when you've seen it done in Stratagem you realize it's actually very funny.
So for you guys having seen Stratagem, do you feel like this adds a layer to it, and it's not a case of going, oh, well, they're just repeating something we've seen in Stratagem? It didn't feel like that.
I don't think so.
No,
anyone else thinks.
No.
But
it's a different
context
yeah.
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, okay.
Great, no further questions.
There is some chat as well about he considered blacking up, and then there's a long section about how a local lady did it in order to be Diane Abbott at a Tory fundraiser, and Grant Shapp said to Ellen that could could be taken out of context.
I'm just going to add another one to Shapp's watch.
Yeah. Shapp's watch.
Adam, not just any local lady, Roger Finch's wife, I believe, and Roger Finch does play a bit of a role throughout the series, well, yeah.
And also, I'm pretty sure, is this where he says he could split Roger's head like a beef tomato if he had a rifle?
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone remembers in Mid-Morning Matters where there's a section where they ask, what is Alan's friend firing his air rifle into? And the answer is a beef tomato.
Which again,
yeah.
I just thought that was a nice little callback.
Yeah. Amazing. There's a huge bit of Coogan and Alan crossover now as we go into extended details of the car. Which I think they do this a few times this series. I don't love it, to be honest with you. I can see why it appeals to the writers to do it, but it's one of these kind of long sections of like car detail that, I don't know, doesn't really go anywhere.
I think that's a bit of a common theme in this episode, personally. A few sections that are a little bit directionless and a little bit void of humour. It's not the strongest.
Is it this bit as well? So he's in the car and he's trying to not move his mouth whilst he's talking, right? So he says that it makes him sound a bit like Paul Daniels, which I think is the second Paul Daniels reference in a row in this series.
Yep.
And he calls Paul Daniels a very unpleasant man, and queries whether he's dead. Can confirm he died in 2016. Now, I'm actually quite surprised that Paul Daniels hasn't featured in the APU more.
Yeah.
It feels like he'd be ripe for being one of those kind of like middling 80s, 90s celebrities that would feature quite heavily in the APU. But doing a bit of Googling, I did find something which I thought was such a perfect kind of crossover of Paul Daniels and Alan's worlds. So I found an article from 2014, which was basically Paul Daniels lived in a hotel to save money. So the article reads thus: Magician Paul Daniels has said he got around the costs of living in London as a young performer by spending a year living in a London hotel. He says he lived in the Kensington Hilton for about a year as he was working at the Prince of Wales Theatre and in television, and the hotel was a convenient location to get to both the theatre and television studios. So he was also not only just living in a hotel, but it the genius of its location was it was equidistant between a theatre and a television studio. I thought that was just perfect.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lot of fun. And speaking of sort of celebrities that you're surprised don't come up more often in the APU, we're on to a little section called Alan Swap Shop, where he's trying to trade a meeting that he won with Ian Botham for any red letter experience or £500 cash.
Yeah. I thought this was interesting because you've actually... Ian Beefy Botham, or the B, or Beef, yep. Sorry, he actually has been mentioned in both the Partridge books. So in iPartridge, Alan writes that he met Beef as a sports reporter in the 90s. And in, I think, Nomad, he talks about covering Ian Botham doing a charity walk, Land's End to John O'Groats in 1985. It's interesting that there's no mention of him being a bad person in both of those instances. And you would actually, I would imagine, Alan the character and Ian Botham would actually be kind of bosom buddies almost, you know. Mm. Isn't Ian Botham some kind of Brexit trade envoy? I would have thought he would be right up Alan's street.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah. Oh, so you're saying he's kind of taken against him here by trying to, rather than meeting him, he's trying to trade...
Well, because he's saying he's been told he's a bad person, which I find quite surprising in terms of what you'd expect from the character, I think.
Yeah, that's very fair. There's a bit of, a bit more of this pathos when we're now referring back to his grandkids, which I think for a lot of us was one of the highlights of Oasthouse Series 1, was the sort of development of him, his sort of fractured relationship with Fernando's kids. So, he's been building them a solar system out of various parts that he's found lying around.
Yeah,
and I can only imagine what that's going to look like as well, by the way.
Well, he's used a pea as Earth.
a pea for the moon, sorry. A dumped toilet ball cock for one of the other planets.
Mars.
Yeah.
So, and he's, to be fair, he has bought lots of space related chalk as well. Your galaxies, your Milky Ways, your Mars, your 12.
I think it also emerges here that this isn't by request or even for a specific point in the future where he's going to go and meet the grandkids. This is just for some unknown next visit.
He says he's not sure when they're coming back over. So, this is very much a speculative build on his part, so that when, if they decide to come back, there is something for them to play
he can
with.
Present them with the discarded toilet ball cock.
Fly tipped solar system.
Yeah, kids don't want Marvel and Disney princesses. No. What they want is a pea for Earth and a toilet ball cock for Mars. Go and play with that, kids.
Without giving any spoilers away, because one, we'll get to it, and two, Adam hasn't finished the series yet, but. And I wonder if this has come from the Gibbons learning from, not mistakes, but learning from maybe where certain things fell down in Oasthouse Series 1, is that the kind of underlying, there's not really an overarching story or narrative in this series. And I think the closest thing that we do have to that is Alan's sort of journey towards, seeing his grandkids again. So the development of this solar system, basically, which starts to build out over multiple episodes. So again, maybe this is one for the wrap up, but it's interesting to note that sort of very light narrative through line doesn't start until episode 3 of this series. And I wonder if that is something that they've done. They've stripped out that element of it, and that's, like I say, something we can discuss towards the end. But
I just had one bit as well about neighbourliness before we continue perhaps with Uranus. He writes about neighbours doing favours for each other, and his example is, I will get you some cheap chicken if you get me some cigarettes. Neighbourliness. I thought that sounds more like bartering in prison than doing favours for your neighbours, doesn't it? I just thought that was really weird.
It emerges at this point that actually it's Alan and the other members of the Neighbourhood Watch/Not Neighbourhood Watch's fault that this fly tipping is occurring in the first place, because it was previously a spot where people met to do dog, aka dogging, until him and his cronies went down there and played the theme tune to the Antiques Roadshow and Emmerdale to deter them, and only after they had left did the fly tipping start. So he's inadvertently the creator of his own downfall here.
And they now meet by the golf course and they're very happy.
Did anybody have anything to say about Alan's mysterious friend Gregor, by the way, who asks if he can I see Uranus?
I thought you were back with your wife.
Quite an interesting aside, yeah.
What I do like about this series, again, we'll talk about it at the end, but what I do like about this series is Alan seems to have a lot of friends or people that he's spending time with, which I'm very happy for Alan, whether it's on a superficial level or whether
They're all quite questionable individuals, yeah, I think is the issue.
I don't know, not all of them, but he is spending time with other people, which is nice. True. In the absence of Seldy.
Isn't it funny how protective we've become of poor Alan? Sort of like, I'm glad he's got friends, but I'm a bit worried he's fallen in with the wrong crowd. There's also a nice bit where he talks about he's been switched on about home security ever since they built an affordable housing estate on the other side of the playing fields.
This is great. Yeah.
And I did think that, I mean, maybe intentionally or not, I did think this is Coogan playing to some genuine partridges here. I can imagine people hearing this actually taking this bit at face value, in the same way that like Al Murray ended up with an audience that he didn't really want, that actually sort of believed what the pub landlord was saying. I feel like there's almost a bit of a partridge audience at this point where it's become so subtle that they kind of just listen to agree.
I do like when he's talking about how if nurses bring people back from a night out, they're not exactly going to be people who are going to be rubbing shoulders with golfers, are they? They're going to be pumped. They're going to do the deed. They're going to be pumped for so much testosterone. They've got to go on the rob.
Yeah, namely names. Johnny Goodtime, Liam Likely Lad, and Nobby No Good.
Brilliant.
But it's okay because Kirsty also did send him a list of household items that can be repurposed as a weapon.
You can kill a man with an ashtray.
I love every Kirsty also mention we get in this series. I mean, it's neck and neck with her and Grant and Shapps, I think. But basically, every time Kirsty also makes an appearance in this series, particularly so far, I've got with it. She's basically always doing something violent or kind of dishing out advice on how to be violent. Very, very amusing.
Yeah, brilliant. She's awful.
there's
in the APU, we don't know.
Allegedly awful.
Yeah. There's a bit where he's saying you get bad male drivers and bad female drivers. I mean, you can argue about the percentages, but the fact remains. So I did argue about the percentages. Right. Men, according to the National Highway Safety Administration, men cause 6.1 million accidents a year, whereas women cause 4.4 million accidents a year. So the statistics speak for themselves.
Right. Did you put that look that up on a spreadsheet? Sorry, I said spreadsheet instead of spreadsheet there.
Anyone keen some life hacks?
Oh, yes, please.
Well, just pop some grapes if you want to chill down a drink. But do make sure that they are red grapes, because the white ones can look like testes. And that's the end of the life hacks.
It's the other way around.
Use white ones.
The red ones look like testes. Purple
ones look like testes.
Have you been drinking testes?
I think it's Barabbas. My name is Barabbas all over again, isn't it? It's white grapes, it's red grapes.
Yeah, well, three people know what it is and one person's got it wrong.
Yeah.
And the grapes must be frozen. Alan... Don't just put some grapes into...
So Alan's fallen asleep on the stakeout.
And he's fuming.
He's so angry at himself, and this comes up quite a lot. His rage is mainly directed at himself for failing. He's very self-critical, isn't he? Eight bags have been dumped while he was asleep, including a mattress and a sink. I made a prediction at this point, which actually didn't turn out to be true, which is that I thought Alan himself would be accused of being the fly tipper. But no, didn't come to pass.
Although arguably he is the fly tipper by the end of this episode, because this transpires. True.
So yes, he's then in hot pursuit of the fly tipper, and then he's caught, winds his window down an inch. And then we've got this lovely exchange where he immediately softens, as we've seen him do many times before.
Yeah, he sounds scared, and yeah, it's an immediate climb down, isn't it? It's great.
Yeah, it's not very clear, but I think it's prohibited. Yeah. Brilliant.
I did like that he immediately calls the police. Of course, he does post the confrontation, and his description of the man to the police was that he is high. And between the ages of 18 and 66.
And also can't describe whether or not he was white initially on the call.
He's a white-faced fat man.
with a big head.
And then my favourite bit is when he backs out and just goes, thank you, 999.
Yeah, thank you, 999.
I thought the actor of the fly tipper, I couldn't quite place who that is. Either. Like, they sounded familiar to me.
Agreed.
But they did a very good job of sounding menacing. I thought that was a great little exchange. And yeah, just kind of like the state of shock that Alan is in is so funny, because you've got the kind of like, did you hear me calling me a tit fucking Wally? And then yeah, the police call. It is a bit like a child making a call, because he's in shock so much, isn't it? The way he's kind of like going through all the information. And is 999, is that a Gibbons? I wasn't 100% sure if that was a Gibbons.
Yeah. I would assume that they do a lot of that, but it is hard to tell, and they're obviously not credited, so it's difficult to confirm, but you would assume so.
And so 6 hours on from where we started the episode, he's now moved / hidden all of the fly tipping materials himself. Effectively, he is the fly tipper, as said earlier. But he has found a small Venus for his grandkids' solar system, so... Ending on something.
Where's he going? He goes, I'm dead happy now.
Dead please now. There was another gotta try stand up in this episode as well, when he says, less witching hour, more sandwiching hour. I think these jokes aren't getting better as they go along, are they?
I feel like probably somebody with more time on their hands and a keen approach to editing could put all of his gotta try stand up gags together and see if it makes some sort of coherent set. Could it be any worse than Jimmy Carr? Who knows?
Adam gunning for Carr. I didn't see that one coming. Yes, and actually, just before we move on to the next episode, we forgot to mention it, or I forgot to mention it. Maybe I'm just taking on this role. That episode 2 did not take place in or anywhere near the Oast House, and this episode also did not take place inside the Oast House. So that's 3 out of 3 so far.
So we're looking for we need Alan inside the Oast House to get a tick for that, right? Not nearby, because I'd assume he's nearby the Oast House. But okay, so we've gone 2 Shaps and 0 Oast House.
Yeah,
great.
And a couple of Allsops, although we're not keeping count. So on to episode 4, which is titled Potholing. And here's Nick with the synopsis.
Alan and his friend Ronald go potholing, but Ronald stays in the car because he's in a mood. But that's Ronald for you.
Alan's written that one, hasn't he?
That's really
he's
good.
He's absolutely written that one. And I love that, they started out so sort of professionally and like a neat summary of the episode, and now it's just like rambling like the rest of it. So, yes, there's a bit where he opens it going, testing, left that in, I noticed. There's a bit here where it seems like he's just getting his microphone out, or dusting his microphone off for the first time. Do you think this was meant to be the first episode?
I've got that exact note that it suggests that this it certainly could have been, because it's the way that it starts, you'd expect it to be the first one.
Yeah,
but
that,
I don't know.
That's good.
Because he's had to go into the loft to get the microphone as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, you would, exactly.
Unless
know.
If he's
not
putting
clear.
The microphone away in the loft every time between recording.
But I feel like he would have already noticed the towels that for some reason stink if he'd been up and back to the loft all the
time. That's, you know what, that was the first note I had basically, is like, why is his podcast mic up in the loft? So perhaps that does hold water, that the running order of this series has changed. I think there are some other points in this series where it feels to me like episodes are in a different order. But we will get to that, I think, next week, probably. I think there's quite a specific thing that he says which doesn't actually make sense.
I enjoyed the Murphy Richards kettle, when obviously in series 1 of the Oast House, we hear him speak to the MD of Morphy Richards, and he calls him Morphy. So already called him Morphy, and now he's called Gettle Murphy. It's just all over the place.
There's another linguistic mangling where he used the phrase gay abandonment instead of gay abandon as well.
But the burning question is, what do you call yours, a loft or an attic?
Loft.
Loft.
Oh, it's a loft.
I think I'd alternate between the two, actually. I'm not wedded to either of those things.
That's your choice. You're free to make that choice.
It really is. I was going to say, though, I thought the image of him squeezing in and out of his loft between the ceiling and the stack of towels, the ones that stink, that is a bit of a throw forward to basically potholing, isn't it? So he's getting the practice in without even realising it.
That's very true. So yeah, he's got two juices and Christmas decorations in his loft. He then gets quite wistful thinking about whether Belinda Carlisle's ever been to Carlisle.
I did try Googling that. Nothing useful came up.
No evidence.
No.
And he bought that cassette from Woolworths when he had, and I quote, a whole life ahead of me.
On that point, though, I did try and find out if Belinda Carlisle had been to Carlisle, but that search, it doesn't work. It takes you nowhere.
But yeah, the kind of Woolworths thing and the life ahead of me thing, again, it's actually, there is the pathos, there is the sadness and the melancholy coming in here.
Well, yeah. as he goes on to say, with lofts, it's easy to get drawn into a tunnel of memories.
He also says you can mope, have a sit down, let the sadness wash over you. Very maudlin start to the episode and the series, really, yeah.
He's then showing off about his potholing abilities, so I think we all know what direction this is going in, as he describes himself as deceptively nimble, like Michael Gove or Rumpelstiltskin. And then, as Nick's quote in the intro suggested, some confusion about what Rumpelstiltskin was or is.
I also think at this point there's an opportunity for Jed to do a 1-minute movie review, because I am convinced he will have seen the 90s horror film Rumpelstiltskin. So I'm sure we can.
No way he hasn't seen that.
And perhaps he can also clear up whether Rumpelstiltskin is a leprechaun or just a small magic man.
Can it be both?
Let's throw to Jed now.
Welcome back to another 1-minute movie review. I'm your host, Jed Shepherd, and today I'm talking about the 1995 fantasy horror film Rumpelstiltskin. Nick's right, I love this movie, mostly because it's like a reverse Candyman. Instead of saying his name to call him, saying his name kills him. Weakest antagonist of all time. He gets transported through sketchy magic to present day, and now he wants the baby of a police officer's widow. He isn't a dwarf or a goblin, he's a grown man slightly bending over in a rubber mask. It doesn't quite fit him. He most definitely isn't a leprechaun, as the director Mark Jones already covered that 2 years earlier with the Jennifer Aniston starring Leprechaun. It's not as good as Leprechaun, but it can certainly help pass 90 minutes with only brief moments if I wanted to check Twitter for distraction. I give Rumpelstiltskin 3 baby cells out of 5. See you next time on Jed's 1-Minute Movie Reviews.
The answers we were all looking for there.
Thanks, Jed.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So Alan's still active on Tinder, often suggesting a country walk as a date. And he mentions that he cedes a few moments along the way to illustrate his strength. This, again, ties fairly directly to something that we saw in Stratagem in terms of Alan using kind of physical prowess and thinking that that's like the way to a woman's heart or the way to prove a point.
There's a turn of phrase here, though, that I think you need to call out. He talks about vaulting styles on Tinder dates for the woman he has selected, as if A, Tinder works by you selecting women. It doesn't. But the idea of Alan just selecting women is also a bit gross and icky.
It makes him sound very much like a victim, doesn't it? I have selected my victim. Yeah,
yeah. And a one-way road to a big kiss also slightly turned my stomach.
At what point does he talk about wearing stretchy chinos? I was keen to talk to resident stretchy trouser fan Tom Stab about that.
Easy for you to say.
Stretchy chinos, Stab, what are you saying?
Yes, 100%. I love a stretchy trouser. I cannot, like, I'm never wearing jeans again. Like, they are brilliant. Like, I can highly recommend. You get some excellent ones from ASOS, and if you use my referral code, Tom's... use the promo code MonkeyTennis1 to get 10% off.
Use the promo code FUCKBELTS to get 20% off.
But yeah, stretchy trousers, they are the future. Bloody love them.
I had to say, at this point in the episode, I'm sort of, obviously, we pause as we go to make notes and things. So there was less pausing than ever going on here. I felt like long stretches of this were kind of fine / amusing, but not a huge amount to report or comment on, I don't think.
One thing I did enjoy, which I kind of stumbled across, and again, I think some of this is just pure coincidence, a bit like the Paul Daniels living in a hotel thing. You know, these aren't actual sort of touch points, it's just pure coincidence. So he's talking about Bear Grylls, and God knows why, but I popped Bear Grylls into Google and found this from the Times, where he talks about his Christian faith and meditation, and he's promoting a book, and it says it's largely written on a phone while he was out in the wild, providing reading for the everyday as an aid to prayer or meditation. Now, only two episodes ago, where Alan was talking about writing his own book using his phone as a dictation. I just thought some of the coincidences between these things seem surprising.
See, it might not surprise me if that is deliberate, because, I mean, again, I wasn't aware that Bear Grylls being very Christian was a thing, but obviously that's the big joke when Alan's talking about Bear Grylls here, that he's a fascinating man, but only within a very narrow band of subjects, because he'll always bring it back to Jesus. So I thought that was something they just made up. But that's obviously actually a real trait. Yeah. So it wouldn't surprise me if they've taken things like that and deliberately put that in as an Alan character trait at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Is it not the case that they've been researching Bear Grylls because they're going to talk about him, and then off the back of that, they found stories from Bear Grylls, they found stories from Paul Daniel, you know, etc.
Yeah, possibly.
That they can weave into Alan's life as well. Yeah, fun that Alan says that you have to use your survival skills to get out of a conversation with Bear Grylls because he will always circle back to Jesus.
Imagine him and Lynn would get on really well.
Yeah. Can we touch on the bucket list and the brilliant gag that's weaved into this, which I thought was exceptional?
I mean, I've got their lists down here, but quickly, should we set the scene of why these bucket lists got written?
That's a good idea.
Yes, please. Especially the comparative level of detail.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? So Alan and his friend Ronald. Ronald was basically a familiar face at the Boxy Wheat Sheaf, but they bonded over basically having health scares at the same time. And obviously what's great about this is Alan gives a very full and comprehensive rundown of Ronald's issue, and it turns out that it was just because he wasn't drying himself properly after his bath.
Also, crucial to mention, it was a bum skin flare
And Alan also goes on to kind of discuss his testicle, Ronald's testicle size. But then when it comes to Alan's health scare, Alan won't discuss it because it's private. So he's really done Ronald over there, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Should we start with Ronald's bucket list then? Does anyone want to kick this off?
Kick the bucket?
Well, look, it's see the pyramids, hang glide, learn chess, kiss a guy, visit the Falklands.
A great
list. Broadly seems good. Whatever you want.
Have you got Alan's bucket list?
Alan's. skidding sideways to halt in a car, operating machine gun turret from the back of a pickup truck in Afghanistan or any sandy country, kissing a guy, conducting a gospel choir, and of course, top of the list. Yeah. That is top of the list.
So are we to deduce from this that they have worked on these lists together and that there's some sort of homoerotic subtension here that both of them have kissing a guy on their lists that they came up with while they were together?
Have they kissed?
I'm saying yes. Yeah, I'm saying okay. They've kissed. Yeah, that's what I'm taking from that. But I love the fact that, I mean, Alan's list kind of is all things that you would expect. You know, it's got kind of car stunts. It's got shooting a gun. I mean, I do love the caveats like Afghanistan or any sandy country. That's great. But I love the fact he's included potholing. But just before they go into this list, he's actually said he didn't/doesn't like potholing. So why put it on your list? You're saying you still don't like it, but you put it on your bucket list. I thought that was great.
He's crowdsourced some answers from Twitter, hasn't he? Twitter. Someone said to him they thought the input from Twitter followers and his listeners was the best thing about his show, which is just not true. Arguably, it's the best thing about our show. But we're less precious than Alan. He's had a few people write in with their suggestions of bucket lists. So the first said he'd just like to say goodbye and make his peace with God, which Alan stresses is not the point of this. It's not things you want to do on your deathbed. It's just other things. Yeah. Simeon's got the hang of it though. Swim with two dolphins, stand with one foot on each. To which Alan, again, mangling language, says you'd need to run that by Petter.
Yeah. I also like that he just describes wearing dolphins as grey shoes.
Is that where he's like, and if they're good with it, just go for it, I think.
Yeah, if they're fine with it, just go for it.
Yep. Struggling morally with Edward's submission, which is to turn invisible and visit women's saunas. Initially, Alan's kind of saying this would be frowned upon, but also ultimately decides that as long as he doesn't touch them and they don't know he's there, that no harm has been done.
But he won't sanction a peephole.
Yeah,
he's very clear on that.
So come on then, question to the group. What superpower would you have?
Oh, like Pam, I'd probably track down a ticket inspector before turning the gun on myself.
I love that. That really made me laugh.
Oh, no, that's my bucket list.
Yeah. You've got superpowers and bucket list confused, Adam. I wanted superpowers, not things you've always wanted to do.
What superpower would I have?
Hmm.
I'd like to swim faster than a shark.
Great. Tom Stab, superpower.
Like to have some sort of superpower which enables me to not have to work and live and travel and just basically do whatever I want. So I would have the ability to pass through walls and just pick up lots of money and then just walk out with the money. I can cut.
You just want to be rich, don't you?
Yeah, I just want to be rich.
You want to be Jeff Bezos, basically.
What you've done is you've gone for wanting to be rich, but you've added a layer of unnecessary effort in.
Yeah. Actually, you know what I want? I can just make people do what I want by doing that. I can just make people do what I want.
Great. And I'll go for flying. Then I can just don't have to pay for travel and can probably just earn loads of money because fly. So I can also be rich as well.
Still
so it's
have
fine.
To work.
Okay, so two of you just want to be rich.
Yeah. I want to live in it.
Well, no, I would quite like to fly. I'm just saying that becoming rich might be a benefit.
Actually, you know what? Yeah. Yours is actually quite good because it's more beneficial for the planet.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm putting the planet first.
See, eco warrior.
Adam, have you, Captain Planet, Adam, have you got one, or is it still just turning a gun on yourself after catching up with Ticket Inspector? An interesting superpower at best.
I'd have to say unlimited genies.
I mean, I guess that might work. I mean, that's the fun, isn't it? There are no rules, so fine. Should we move on? How about Dire Straits? So yeah, Dire Straits, you've got Alan has picked up his walking pace that it's more Sultans of Swing than Brothers in Arms. You'll be pleased to know Sultans of Swing has 837 million plays on Spotify, Brothers in Arms only 226 million. So really is winning the war there. So basically Alan is off and walking on his own because I believe him and Ronald have had a falling out by this point.
Yes, and of all the things to fall out about, I'd imagine too much butter in a sandwich is the thing that would fracture any relationship. So Ronald's wife has made sandwiches for Alan and Ronald on their potholing adventures, but Alan takes issue with the fact that there is too much butter in the sandwich. I also liked that he makes reference to EC Butter Mountains. I like that he's still calling it the EC over the EU as well. That was quite nice.
Have you got how he describes the amount of ham in the sandwich as well?
I haven't.
Oh, this really tickled me. Like a pig has leant forward and shaved his face on the bread.
There's a fun bit around this point where Alan says, I'm in a wonderful place, literally the Peak District, which I thought was reminiscent of I'm going nowhere, Lynn. Literally, I'm on the ring road.
Yes, yeah, that's good.
I mean, quick question to the group. Are we on Ronald's side? Is there such a thing as too much butter?
On Alan's side. I'm on Alan's side. There definitely is a thing as too much butter. I would take umbrage with someone putting too much butter in my sandwiches. I don't think you need lots of butter in sandwiches. I'm also I'm one of those people. Some people butter both slices of the bread when you're putting a sandwich together. That's nonsense to me. The butter.
That's the default way.
Nick, poll time. We're going to drop a poll. We're going to ask people.
Nick, write this down. You're running a poll.
Running a poll. Right.
I've got a pen.
Oh, no.
We're going to run a poll. Do you butter both pieces of bread when making a sandwich? Because I'm
100%. Everybody says
100%.
Yes.
Well, you've already got a quarter of the people here. So 25% right here. I don't think doesn't need it. Does not need it, because what you do is you put your condiment. You spread that on the other slice of bread. You don't need the butter on there. Otherwise, you just get a buttery, mushy mess. Run out of breath now.
Buttery biscuit base.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Stab will be potholing alone today.
I do agree with the condiment thing, but I would condiment both sides. So if I was having mayonnaise in my sandwich, for example, I would condiment both sides and I wouldn't include butter.
It's like the glue that holds it all together.
I'd butter and then mayo. And then...
But only on one pit? No, because like you want to lubricate both pieces of bread. Otherwise you've got a dry sandwich.
We're going to fall out here.
You're listening to Sandwich Tennis.
If you're having a cheese and pickle sandwich, would you, on one slice of bread, have butter and then a layer of pickle? Branston pickle. Would you mix butter and Branston pickle together?
I wouldn't
on
have
one
Branston
side of bread?
Pickle. Have you read the ingredients list on Branston pickle? Grim.
I've checked out of this entirely, and I'm just watching the video that of us all talking and imagining it on Twitter with a little Joe logo in the bottom corner and then man goes insane about sandwich as the caption at the top.
Right, we'll take it to a poll.
Can I just if we go back to the genesis of this falling out as well, when Alan is talking about it, he says we've had a falling out or a contretemps, I think he says. He says Ronald would refer to it as a contretemps because he likes to use French and Latin words, as many dicks do.
Important.
Keep an eye on that. That will come back.
Important.
And actually, you can also add to that, Alan does have previous form on. At the very least, one, you need to have a basic grasp of Latin, and two, use of Latin on his blazer badge. So, yeah.
Exactly that. Yes, Ronald is now looking nonchalant, or trying to look nonchalant. If anything, he looks chalant.
Also a French term. So, and Tom, is everything... Are you okay, or are you still angry?
Oh, I'm livid.
Okay.
I'm thinking about sandwiches.
I think this is the first time we hear the new sting that presumably has been edited by Nathan that we heard about in a recent episode. An a cappella bit, which is a little bit out of time, and B seems very Adam Buxton-esque, like that's been the inspiration for this.
Well, Adam, I don't know whether you're going to like this or dislike this based on what you've just said, because I feel like you've given it a negative and a positive. It really reminded me of your theme tune on the Reads Like a Four podcast.
I did think that as well, actually, in that it's a bit out of time and shoddily recorded.
Look, that's not the angle I was going with. I just think the nature in which it recorded, well, in terms of it being a cappella, I thought it was very similar. So, well done you for trailblazing on that front.
For being Partridge adjacent.
Yes.
He then
goes... Do you want to drop in a link for Reads Like a Four? Tell people where to go to listen to that?
I mean, I haven't recorded an episode for some time. If people want to search it out, that is entirely up to them.
Right,
just for the theme tune alone. So Alan's got a lot to say about carports. I would have thought Alan would have been an advocate of carports. Quite surprised that he's so against them. And he says they're for the wealthier man, notes not woman, but also that arguably it's just a half-hearted garage, and that you don't really need one if you've got a modern car. That's Alan's take on the carport.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that it does seem a bit out of step with the character, but then I guess perhaps they wrestle that back because he then goes into quite technical reasons why you don't need it because of the coating that is put onto modern cars. So that side of it does sit with the character very well. So, yeah, interesting.
That's true. Important to note as well that as a consequence of his falling out with Ronald, he is now potholing alone slash unsafely. Most people go in pairs for reasons that will become apparent.
did anybody else enjoy the fact that Alan also tells us, well, basically we learn he's going potholing, but he doesn't want to get his hair wet, which seems like that's not going to work, is it?
I also like just the thought that he's actually podcasting whilst potholing, which is surely nigh on impossible as well. Like, and you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, incredibly unsafe and dangerous. And your mics would get dirty.
In my research for this, because I kind of had an idea of what potholing was, but I kind of did a bit of a deep dive. And I was just looking at it going, why would anyone do this?
It sounds horrendous.
It sounds horrific. Oh, it sounds like I don't want to be stuck in...
I've done it.
Have you?
Yeah, I've done
it. On a school trip, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm more caving than potholing.
Yeah, I mean, I think like potholing, there's a slight difference between caving and potholing, like exploring mass open sort of caves and just like climbing into these tiny... It's like The Descent. Like,
That said, though, when we went caving, there were still points where we basically had to get through gaps that were like an A3 sheet of paper size. Swing your battery pack to the side so you can get through. Like,
fuck that.
Yeah, like you have to turn your body a certain way. It's the only way you'll get through certain bits. Yeah, I mean,
I went to the Dordogne.
Yeah, I wouldn't choose to do it on a regular basis, definitely.
I was just going to say, I would say if you are going to go potholing, if you want a better chance of getting through safely, then perhaps buttering just one slice of the sandwich is the way to go.
Don't start him off.
But remember, there is...
But only if you're going potholing. If you don't want to go potholing and crucially want to enjoy life, it's butter or one slices.
I'm Googling the ingredients in Branston pickle now.
Horrendous.
Okay, whilst you're giggling that, I want to ask a bit of a question about the physics of Alan's predicament here. Now, obviously, you have to kind of suspend disbelief a little bit because it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but I just don't think it really makes sense. I can't really square how he's stuck, but then how does he reach to get his water? He's shouting for Ronald, but surely that means he's shouting into the cave, not outwards, so Ronald wouldn't hear him. Later on, he talks about how he's looked at the map again. So how has he managed to do... How has he... Like, the implication is that he's stuck and can't move. So how is he able to, like, move his arms and access things that are on his person? Doesn't really make a lot of sense, I thought.
I think, imagine if the hole in the cave is like a sort of figure eight shape and he's pinched on the torso, so he's still got room around the sides to get to his pack, etc. But you can't crucially...
Oh, because I think he does refer to a bicep pocket, doesn't he? So maybe if it's like upper half... Because this also reminded me a bit of, I think, episode 2 in series 1 of Oast House, when he is on the ramble and he talks about unzipping the toggle from his knee pocket and lifting his legs in the air so that two penguins would slide out. It's a very similar kind of scenario going on there. Hidden pockets with penguin biscuits in.
He's also talking about phrases that sound like you're being rude when you're not. But I thought it was interesting because the examples he gives, cockfight, bleeding radiator, blasted tunnel, which is the one he uses first. But then doesn't he then say bastard cup final?
Yeah.
Which is not an example of that at all.
I don't know, Tom Stab, you're the resident football expert. Could that ever be a thing?
Ooh. Yeah, is there a league? Is there a bastard league?
technically, yes, in the same that anything could be, oh, that bastard cab driver or that bastard nurse or that bastard policewoman. But, yeah, could be. You could put bastard in front of anything, it would work.
Yeah, but as a swear...
We lost that bastard cup final.
Yeah, but that's the point. He's trying to give examples of things that aren't actually swearing, and I think that would be...
Yeah, fine.
So it's not a thing. That's what we're saying. Yeah.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Doesn't he say that he could use a stalagmite to pull himself free, but he doesn't want to because it's taken so long to grow.
Yes.
Such respect
for
the caves.
Could save his life.
And I don't care how thirsty you are, water is never going to taste like Ribena.
He's losing his mind now.
Okay, I have a theory about that line specifically. I reckon that's a Neil Gibbons line because the other day he tweeted in relation to a Westminster voting intention poll that had Labour very much in the lead. And he retweeted that saying, never heard of Omnisys, which is the company that had done this particular voting intention poll. Never heard of Omnisys, but fuck it, I'm drinking these polls down like big glasses of Ribena. So I think Neil Gibbons is the resident Ribena fan in this writing team. He's given the game away there.
There's a nice bit where he's talking about A Long Way Down with Charlie Borman and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes, that's very good.
Comparing their travels to his own predicament, saying he's not free, although he is a long way down.
It's interesting that he goes and goes to instinctively call him Obi-Wan Kenobi, considering he hates Star Wars and people who like Star Wars, and which again gets mentioned several times in the APU. Mm. He does also in this episode say that people like Star Trek are dicks as well, and all those Doctor Who people get a life. Poor old Simon and Lucy with their Doctor Who listen along there or whatever it was called.
Is it time to talk about telecommunications company O2?
This is a real highlight of the series for me, this line.
I feel like for anyone who has been on the O2 network, as I have, since about the age of 20, and I'm well into my middle age now, I feel his pain and frustration. However, I do quite like VIP access at the O2 and their lovely pre-sales, so I'm keen to stick with them for now, but just woe betide if you want reception outside of the M25.
I mean,
so you wouldn't say you despise O2 then, as Alan does.
Can we give the full line? He says, I despise O2. I don't want access to the VIP area at Twickenham. I want my phone to fucking work. And yeah, I think we can. I'm on O2 as well. And to be fair to Nick did warn me about how bad their level of service was. But basically, it was a good deal, so I just ignored that and went for it.
You're still both on it.
Nick, you were not wrong.
You're still both on it. And also, Nick, aren't you...
I'm tied into a contract.
Also, Nick, aren't you outside the M25?
Yeah, just, which is why I never call me. I won't answer. You won't get through.
Phone will not ring.
Yeah.
This all follows Alan's assertion that he can't get any reception because he's encased in solid rock or because he's on O2.
It's because he's on O2. In fact, ironically enough, we had an engineer round today doing some work to do with like smart meters and stuff. And he was basically just saying, yeah, I've checked. And basically, the smart meters run on O2 SIM cards. And he was like, yeah, you've just got no signal. And like, I live in zone 2 in London. It's that bad.
Brilliant. We talked a little bit about him laying into Star Trek and Doctor Who people. But I don't think we mentioned that he described them as Diet Coke drinking asthmatics that live with their mum.
Ah, no, Adam, I think actually, I thought this was quite an interesting little aside here. He said, what I'd give to be sharing a Diet Coke with an asthmatic who lives with his mum. Now, my theory here is, he's talking about High Noon there.
Mm.
Because when he accosted High Noon at the end of Series 1, that was somebody that lived with his mum. And I think there was stuff about... There was always, I think, speculation about him being of ill health and what have you, and being a bit of...
Okay. Yeah. But I think he's also implying that is the sort of person that watches Doctor Who as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it works on both levels. But I did wonder, was that like a little hint that perhaps him and High Noon did kind of forge some kind of weird friendship and he'd rather be... Yeah, I don't know. I guess it reads both ways, but yeah.
Possibly. Next person to get laid into is bass players. Where he says, yeah, love to learn the bass, only takes a couple of weeks. this rambling tangent, I had a lot of fun with this. I think Alan losing his mind and sort of free associating is great, especially when he then tries to pronounce Knopfler over and over again.
At what point is Grant Chaps thrown off Cheddar Gorge? That's what I'm keen
that's
to,
in a bit. That's in
keen
a bit.
To get into.
Oh, yeah, well, he loses at the argument with himself about killing Grant Chaps.
Yeah. I think there's probably a couple of points to get to before that. So, yeah, after Knopfler bit. And yeah, so then he starts kind of imitating bass guitar and essentially starts performing Joy Division's Transmission, which I thought was quite interesting. Because it feels like that feels like Coogan, yes.
Yep.
I wouldn't have that down as an Alan, yes.
Correct.
I thought that was a bit of a bizarre choice for the character. I'd almost think it'd be more in keeping for Alan to kind of hate Joy Division and just not really be into their music, because it's a bit too kind of, it's actually a bit too like credible and I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting choice. But yeah, obviously Coogan being a huge fan makes perfect sense with the Manchester connection and genuinely good music. But interesting. And I think there's a bit of a Joy Division Transmission kind of reappearance later in this series, as it were.
He chats a bit about how Shackleton and his men survived on real penguins, whereas Alan is attempting to survive on chocolate ones. But seeing himself very much in the same boat there. Then we're getting towards the killing of Grant Shapps, with him talking about
third Shapps mention. I'll just note that down.
I can't quite remember how he gets onto doing away with an enemy and enjoying a wonderful vista.
It's about claustrophobia and agoraphobia. So,
oh, that's right, yeah.
He's basically saying he can understand he isn't claustrophobic, but he can understand why people would be. He doesn't understand agoraphobia because it's, as he describes it, it's a fear of having plenty of room. And then he's basically going on to kind of say the selling point of the great outdoors is that somebody could stand on the top of Kinder Scout in Derbyshire on a crisp March and shit themselves. So, one, that's his main selling point for the outdoors, and two, that means he's done that, hasn't he?
Yeah. Finally, he's being rescued by Ronald. Ronald has arrived. I enjoyed his sort of like push and pull with Ronald, still wanting to make the point about the butter in the sandwiches, but yeah, also so grateful to see him. Did you finish the audiobook? Did they go all the way down? I really love that as well.
And we get this VO motif again, where you hear them talking in the background and then the Alan VO comes in kind of over the top. So yeah, he kind of starts talking about how we're on the planet for a short time. And at this point, I think this is where the sort of Latin part kind of rears its head, doesn't
part
it?
Part of his sign-off, he says carpe diem, which is Latin for seize the day.
Yeah, carpe diem, be present, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, I think, is that a gag there that he actually doesn't understand what carpe diem means? He thinks it means be present.
He's earlier called people who use Latin as dicks, but at least they knew what it meant.
Yeah,
I guess it does work on that level, but I think he's probably having. I think he's also probably poking a little bit of fun at the kind of how overused that expression is, and it's just throwaway, isn't it? With the kind of the scripts, it's just carpe diem, live for the moment, whatever. You know what to do.
But I definitely read that in terms of, he's chastised people for using Latin and then not realised that actually he's doing that himself.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're all in agreement. Tom, anything more on sandwiches, though?
Have you checked the ingredients of Branston Pickle?
Yeah, they're fine.
Awful.
They're fine.
Awful.
Well, I don't understand what's awful about them. There's nothing in here that I'm like, that's like, it's not like fish guts or anything in it. I don't understand what you're...
Isn't it got like mince in it?
What? Mint? Beef?
Mince.
Surely it's an entirely vegetable-based product.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what I had, but it was disgusting.
Pate.
Right.
This seems entirely fitting. Entirely fitting for an episode where Alan has lost his mind and gone on a rambling tangent that we end with 4 to 5 average minutes about sandwich fillings. But
before we get back to any more on sandwich fillings, I thought as well, this episode overall, the way he's panicking, the way he's the panicking noises, trying to calm himself, shouting himself, why did you do this? One, that's very much like him shouting at himself, getting angry at himself in the stakeout episode. But also, this is quite similar to what we've seen happen in Ace House Series 1, where he thinks there's been a break-in and he gets panicked, gets wrapped up in a curtain and falls asleep. So this kind of panicking and then falling asleep as a response to the panic, I think, is quite an interesting character trait that we've seen develop. So I thought that was worthy of a little mention.
and one that we hope we'll see again in future instances in the APU. That's all from us this time on Stakeout and Potholing. Join us next week when we'll be tackling Tynham and Wild Swimming. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, on Instagram it's at MonkeyTennisPod, Twitter at ThePartridgePod, Facebook.com/ThePartridgePod, ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. The hotline is 0793 600 017, and if you're enjoying what you're hearing and you'd like to chuck us a few quid, you can do so at ko-fi.com/MonkeyTennis. So we'll see you next week for two more episodes of Oast House Dissection and Celebration. But until then, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle. Aha!
Yep, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spike.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey Tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzup of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net. Monkey Tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.